powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, like I mentioned, Kenny Mayne's final SportsCenter broadcast included a revealing interview with Aaron Rodgers. Let's talk about what some of what he had to say. Cut number two. This was Aaron Rodgers being asked about, hey, the team drafted that quarterback last year and he ended up sitting on the bench. You had an MVP season, but has that been part of the rift?
It's never been about the draft pick, picking Jordan. I love Jordan. He's a great kid. A lot of fun to work together. I love the coaching staff, love my teammates, you know, love the fan base in Green Bay. It's incredible, incredible 16 years. It's just kind of about a philosophy, you know, and maybe forgetting that it is about the people that make the thing go. It's about character. It's about culture. It's about doing things the right way.
Now, I don't know if I believe Aaron Rodgers. I think it absolutely was about the fact that your team took a quarterback in the first round, traded up, in fact, to take a quarterback in the first round, and that you reportedly hadn't heard about it. Although, I think it sounds like there was some tension brewing underneath the surface that was very much related to that philosophy, Jake.
I think it's a combination of things. And the thing that he talked about is the fact that he believes that the Green Bay Packers front office has lost sight in the fact that it's the people and really the players that make the thing go. It's the people that make the thing go. That's what he said. And what he is referring to is star players. Himself, there was reports that when it happened back in the day in terms of Jordy Nelson, his star receiver, the guy he loved, is one of his best friends on the team, when he got cut and released by the Green Bay Packers, that he was not happy about that and that the communication there was poor. So I think that this is a long brewing situation. You have the rift and feud with Mike McCarthy. You have the front office that doesn't address early on in the draft for 4+ years offensive talent in the first round in the draft. I think there's multiple things that you look at if you're Aaron Rodgers and take slight after slight after slight. And, you know, Jordan Love, that selection was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And he can say that that wasn't it or that doesn't bother me. That move bothered him. Doesn't mean he doesn't like Jordan Love the person,
yeah,
and that he's not, and that he's taking it out on Jordan Love, which I'm happy to hear. I would hope that that would be the case. But Aaron Rodgers is definitely pointing at the front office here and going to war with the front office. And I just don't see this being a win-win situation. I don't see Aaron Rodgers getting a contract extension with the Green Bay Packers. You're tied with him for many years down the road, and there being this relationship that can work between the Green Bay front office and your star quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, your leader, the guy who, you know, he talks about culture. Like, you're poisoning the well. You're having a guy who's poisoning the well calling you Jerry Krause and saying that everybody in that front office doesn't care about you in a negative sense. I mean, I think it's a really, really tough position for the Green Bay Packers to be in because they know that he is special. He is a special talent, MVP-level type of performer last year. How do you just part ways with that?
And it's a good question. That's why Kenny says, all right, if it's not about Jordan Love and cut number three, Aaron, tell me a bit more about those issues.
I think sometimes people forget what really makes an organization. And, you know, history is important, you know, legacy of so many people who've come before you. But the people, that's the most important thing. The people make an organization. People make a business. And sometimes that gets forgotten. You know, culture is built brick by brick, the foundation of it by the people. Not by the organization, not by the building, not by the corporation. It's built by the people. And I've been fortunate enough to play with a number of amazing, amazing people and got to work for some amazing people as well. And it's those people that build the foundation of those entities.
What does it mean, Aaron? What does it mean? Just say that you want to throw the ball more and you want them to take a receiver in the first round. You don't have to make it about building like Lambeau Field brick by brick in the people's bare hands. Just say you wanted them to take DK Metcalf. Just be honest. Be open. That's what you wanted, Aaron. That's what you wanted.
Said people 8 different times.
What do you mean? Like, it makes no sense. This is a way for him. Just pay attention to the very first part. DJ, can you start that cut one more time?
I think sometimes people forget what really makes an organization.
Stop it. That's what he's saying. I think sometimes people forget that I'm the one that makes this organization. That's what I'm hearing. And you know what? He's not wrong. He is not wrong. He has been a multiple-time MVP. He has been the best player on this team. He is Aaron Rodgers. For a while there, was neck and neck with Tom Brady over who's the GOAT. Tom Brady, since surpassed him. That's going to happen when you win that many Super Bowls. But let's be real. I think everyone on the outside is looking at Aaron Rodgers. This isn't me judging Aaron Rodgers or saying he's a villain and saying, Aaron, it sounds like you're frustrated that you either don't have more input into coaching and philosophy or that the team isn't focused on what really makes them win. Am I the only one hearing that?
No, you're hearing that 100% accurate. And it's about Aaron Rodgers. It's about Aaron Rodgers in terms of he believes that the Green Bay Packers should be bowing to him when it comes to not only decision-making, but the appreciation, Stacey, the appreciation of what Aaron Rodgers has brought to the organization in 16 years. Well, dude, you also watched this unfold in front of your eyes 16 years ago when the Green Bay Packers took you in the first round and they had a legend, a Hall of Famer in Brett Favre, and you watched how that song and dance played out. The other thing that I want to point to, Stacey, we are not talking about a Green Bay Packers organization that got ousted in the first round of the playoffs. We're not talking about a Green Bay Packers organization that has struggled to get into the playoffs. We're talking about a Green Bay Packers organization that went 13-3 2 years in a row. Right? NFC Championship game, 13-3, and they come up short. So I think that when you look at the overall scope of where the Green Bay Packers are at, the scope of where Aaron Rodgers is coming from, I don't think this is tenable. I don't think that this is a working relationship that can make it all come together. And to be honest with you, I hope it doesn't. As I said time and time again, please send him to the Denver Broncos. Please go to the AFC. And the question is what is Aaron Rodgers' motivation? Does he want to be in Green Bay ultimately and pan the front office as the ultimate villains? Or does he want out? Like, it's which one do you want? Which one do you want?
Right. Exactly. Now, here's my other question that I kind of wanted to explore with this conversation, because we could talk about Aaron Rodgers all day. But when I say, did Aaron Rodgers cross a line? It's kind of like my general premise here. I guess my bigger question is, what can quarterbacks or players get away with? Like, what is crossing a line in today's NFL? I don't know that Aaron Rodgers did, and I don't know that Russell Wilson did, but I understand why some people disagree with that. Jake, did Aaron Rodgers cross the line here?
Look, in terms of the norm, yeah, he crossed the line. But the thing is that what he was able to do, and I think that this is really smart, and there's a big difference here, is that you are separating church and state. Is you are separating the sanctity of when you enter the building, who do you work with every day? You don't work with the front office. You're not there standing next to Brian Kutikins, your general manager, every single day. You're not standing next to the area scouts and talking with them and going through that process. You're not talking with the president of the Green Bay Packers. You are with your teammates. You're in that locker room. That is a sanctuary. You are with your coaches. And he talked about that. I love that area of my life. I love that area of my team and my experience with the Green Bay Packers as well as the fans. But this other place that I don't have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, that's the issue that I have. And so I think that that's the one thing that Aaron Rodgers did that is smart, where he could play technically and theoretically and continue to play and not have to deal or talk with the front office, but only surround himself with his teammates and his coaches.
I think the tricky part about having this conversation about whether Aaron Rodgers crossed the line is that it's so unique that context is important when you talk about this. In today's NFL, there are certain players, almost all of them quarterbacks, but there are certain players that can get away with doing this and others can't. And you know how you get away with it? By winning. By being really, really, really good. Tom Brady could say almost anything. Pretty much anything outside of like, I'd kill someone. Like, something real wild. But like, he could disagree publicly with the organization. He could do whatever he wanted. It doesn't matter. You're Tom Brady. You've won more Super Bowls than anyone else. Are you tied for Super Bowl wins with the most team, or have you won more Super Bowls than any other team? I think it's that one, right? It's Tom Brady. He can do anything. Aaron Rodgers, close to that category. He's not won the Super Bowls that he has, but it's Aaron Rodgers.
He just came off of an MVP season. So when we talk about some of the things of Russell Wilson, we might agree heavily, and people out there in the public might agree with the actual statement that Russell Wilson made in terms of the offensive line issues, the acquisitions, gone about that direction, or just the overall statement of saying, hey, we got to change the sack number. Like, we as a group, we've got to change that sack number, and people having issue with that. Why? More so than anything else is because in relation to Russell Wilson's performance as of recent, it wasn't great, right? And Aaron Rodgers is getting away with this in some aspects and not being totally killed for this is because he was an MVP last year and played, some of his best football. And why did the Green Bay Packers also take a quarterback in the first round last year with Jordan Love? Is because he wasn't playing MVP level football. Three years prior to that, you saw a major decline in his play. And I don't think that Aaron Rodgers would have the same power in terms of him voicing his opinions. Yeah, a veteran 16-year player, great history in the organization, but I don't think he would have the staying power where the Green Bay Packers publicly, Stacey, are continuing to go to the media and say, well, we love Aaron Rodgers. Oh, we want him to stay. Oh, we want him to be here and really kind of grovel to the media to show how much they want him in Green Bay still. I don't think they would be doing that if Aaron Rodgers wasn't coming off an MVP season.
Now, I asked you guys, in addition to Jake, did Aaron Rodgers cross a line from the 206, insinuating that someone, in this case a higher authority, needs to be fired? Yeah, Stacey, that's going over the line. Could you get away with putting your boss on blast like that and still even retain your job? The answer is no, but here's the difference with the NFL and the reason that I don't always love jobs that we have, 9-to-5, regular jobs, to what players do, is that the success of a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, is so closely tied and impacts the success of his head coach and of his general manager. In some cases, you saw it with Peyton Manning later in his career, the quarterback almost has more power than certainly like an OC, and at times it's kind of like this very close relationship with a head coach. It is a very complicated relationship and very interdependent on each other, and so that's when you kind of wonder, like, who has control here? Who's in the driver's seat? I think it's fair to wonder, like, is Aaron Rodgers in the driver's seat here? Would the Packers, their board of execs or whatever it is that's their operating kind of main management group in place of a GM, like, or owner, would they make a move to get rid of anyone in front of him? Do I think it's a great look to do that? No, I don't. But again, it's complicated.
Well, it just depends on, do you think you can survive through it? Right? Can you work through that? And can it be healthy? Can it be, and when I say healthy, obviously the dynamic is not healthy whatsoever, but can it be healthy enough to where you can win? Is it a cancer that trickles into your locker room? Is it a cancer that affects your relationship from Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, right? Those are the things that you are looking at, and you have to make the determination of, overall, for the long-term health of your franchise and organization. Will it hurt? Will it be frustrating to be, have life without Aaron Rodgers for the Green Bay Packers over the next year or two? Yeah, but eventually you move on. Just like everything else in the NFL doesn't stop for anybody. I don't care how legendary you are. Look at Peyton Manning. Life goes on. One of the greatest quarterbacks to ever do it. Life goes on. And so I think that the Green Bay Packers, they have to have strong convictions in terms of what they want to do, what they value, and does Aaron Rodgers fit that at this current time? I think it's a very difficult decision because they do not want to part ways with him at this point in time, but he is making it extremely difficult for them. And, you drafted this young man in Jordan Love. And if I'm looking at Jordan Love and saying that he is not ready for the show because he didn't get any preseason games, he barely got any practice time last year, then I think you have to bite the bullet and you have to hang on for at least one more season.
And let me tell you what you do if you're a Seahawks fan, too. You close your eyes and you pray that Aaron Rodgers somehow ends up in the AFC, whether it's with Denver, whatever. Get another top-heavy roster in there. Get in there with Kansas City, with the Ravens, with the Bills, with all these teams that are going to be vying for contention. The Titans are probably going to be in there once again and then eventually like lose in the divisional round or whatever is going to happen there after Derrick Henry runs for 190 yards and loses because Tannehill throws three picks. I don't know what's going to happen. Point is, the AFC is loaded. The loaded rosters are over there. If you're a Seahawks fan, you're hearing this story and you're thinking, I don't really care about Aaron Rodgers, but you know what I want? I want the Seahawks to basically just have to beat the rest of the division to create a clear path to the Super Bowl. You got to worry about the Buccaneers. You got to worry about potentially a few teams maybe in the NFC South if Atlanta can get anything out of their roster. But so far, the road to the Super Bowl becomes easier if Aaron Rodgers is not in Green Bay.
It is, and I think that that's the most important thing when it comes to this conversation is, look, there are some serious power brokers in the NFC right now. It is very, very clear who they are, and I think that when you're talking about this group with the Green Bay Packers, they can be in a situation where they're going to one of the favorites, one of the top dogs in the NFC, to finding themselves back into the middle of the pack and struggling for a couple of years, where you talk about your Super Bowl window here in Seattle with Russell Wilson and crew, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams. It might just be a perfect recipe to make that path that much easier.
All right, don't forget you have less than a week slash a few more days slash until the end of the month on May 31st to enter to win 710 ESPN Seattle smart speaker at 710sports.com/win. We're still giving them away every day in the month of May. And there are 31 days in May. I just need everyone to know that. It's a very important fact. Completely unrelated to my birthday. I just need you to know there are 31 days in May. Then all you'll have to do is say, hey, play 710 ESPN Seattle to your brand new smart speaker, and you can listen to our shows all day long. Enter our contest at 710sports.com/win. It is 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down here, Jake, do you feel comfortable with the Seahawks veterans not practicing at OTAs?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to give you this soundbite from Brock Heward, who was on earlier with Danny Gallant, and talking about this very same thing.
We would sure hope, that Tyler would participate in some of these OTAs. We know he is. He talked to you guys about how complicated the system is. But actually getting on that field, doing it against defenses, doing it near full speed, right? All of those things, to me, are important. You're just never going to convince me, as the son of a former coach, you're never going to convince me that, yep, I don't need practice time. I'm going to be just fine.
Now, what Brock said to me is very, very true. That practice time is extremely valuable. You're never going to get that back. Now, in the form of OTAs, though, I think that there is a lot that you can get done, or the same amount of work that you can get done, for a major portion of OTAs. And what people don't understand is a lot of what the beginning half of OTAs is just simply going to meetings and then lifting and maybe doing a couple walkthroughs. You're not doing that much work, and now you're getting to the point of the offseason where you are missing out on legitimate offseason training practices. And I think that when you're talking about that same replication of, getting out there and practicing and doing plays, look, I'm out here in San Diego right now working and training with Russell Wilson, and we're doing the best that we can. And I think that we've done an excellent job of recreating these situations and giving him game-like reps, but it only goes so far. And I do believe at some point in time that you do have to wonder, with the offense and the new offense being around Shane Waldron, would it be a positive benefit to be in person? But I do think that the players overall are trying to make more of a statement about the future of the off seasons and the way that it needs to be done. And so I think that I'll be curious to see if they do the best of both worlds here. If they eventually come back, or if they really dig their heels in and remain and say, hey, we feel like on our own we can get the same work and the same level of preparation done before training camp. Russell Wilson, as we talked about before, Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, guys, if that is the case, they are going to have to put a lot on their shoulders to get guys together and get in a lot of work that they're missing out on in these OTA practices.
Second down. Hello, Stacey.
Hi, DJ.
This question, I just don't even want to talk about the possibility.
It's a nice
of this.
Like first half to Jake's
yes.
Next one.
Yes. What are the odds Julio Jones comes to the 49ers?
Okay. I think of the four NFC West teams, and we had Jeremy Fowler of ESPN on with us, and he basically said this too, the most likely is the 49ers. Why? Well, the 49ers have the most cap space of any of the teams. The Cardinals have slightly more an effective cap space, but if you look at just cap space right now, the 49ers are hovering around $17 million. Now, they may still have to move some guys around and do whatever, but technically on paper, they could afford to absorb Julio Jones' $15.3 million base salary. That salary is fully guaranteed. There's no moving that salary around when you bring him on. So that's why there are just a handful of teams in the league that can even afford to make a move for Julio. Here's what you want if you're a Seahawks fan. What you want is for another team like Denver, like New England, to come in and to be able to offer Atlanta more draft capital than San Francisco. Because don't forget, the 49ers did trade two first-round picks in 22 and 23, two first-round picks to move up to number three overall to take their new quarterback, Trey Lance. Now, they still have a second rounder in there, but they're without a third and first next year, which means if the Broncos or New England can get in there and offer more, you know, tough stuff for San Francisco. You may have the cap space, but you don't have the draft capital to surrender.
Third down. All right, Jake, what have you seen that makes you more comfortable with the Seahawks having to part ways with defensive tackle Jaron Reed?
Well, I think that when you look at Puna Ford, you wonder, can Puna Ford replace that production from Jaron Reed? Well, Pro Football Focus put out a list of the top 32 defensive tackles in the NFL. They also put out a list of top 32 defensive ends in the NFL. The only Seahawk to make that defensive line list of defensive ends and defensive tackles, Puna Ford, ranked at the 19th best defensive tackle. And Jaron Reed, not even on this list. And as they describe, Puna Ford over the last 3 years has been extremely consistent in terms of his overall production, far exceeding expectations as a member of the undrafted free agent club heading into the NFL. And I think that Puna Ford is a tremendous story of overcoming adversity, overcoming being overlooked in terms of his size. But one thing that Puna Ford has done really, really well is he has been an excellent run defender, and he continues to keep getting better with his pass rushing production. And it makes me feel a little bit better to see nationally Puna Ford get recognized for his production and his consistent play.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, should the Seahawks get in on the Julio Jones sweepstakes?
DJ, this is a fantastic question, because right now we're listening to these rumors of John Clayton here saying that, hey, a division rival's got a great chance of maybe getting in on Julio Jones.
It's sad to say, I think there's a decent chance he can end up in San Francisco, and that would really make them that much better as an offense. You know, certainly I think the Chargers are going to be in the mix. Tennessee would be a very valid candidacy. The one I don't buy is the New England Patriots. I mean, Baltimore is definitely interested, but the thing with New England, they've got two $12.5 million tight ends and two high-paid wide receivers that they have. Are they really going to go three receivers being paid that much money and two tight ends? I don't see it, but again, I think he is out of there.
I think that when you look at the situation, and if Julio Jones is to go within the division, if he's to go to the Arizona Cardinals, I think that would be rough. Absolutely rough being paired with DeAndre Hopkins. Look at the 49ers. I think that that would be... That would be a tremendous addition for the 49ers to be able to have Julio Jones. Should the Seahawks get in on this, I think it would be extremely hard for them to be able to pull it off financially. But if there was ever a way, to finagle some finances around, I think pairing DK Metcalf with Julio Jones and Tyler Lockett would be extra special when you talk about that group. So why not? Why not get in on it? Why not, John Schneider, pick up the phone, get a call. You can move money around, Stacey. Julio
Jones.
That's a
lot of money to move.
He's a guy that is a dream to have. And, there's some big contracts out there like Russ's and Bobby Wagner's contract that you could restructure. But in all likelihood, that's not going to happen. But in a dream world, he is absolutely the type of player that you make a splash move for.
I got to recommend, just as a side note, the MMAQB, or Monday afternoon, MAQB, Monday afternoon quarterback column by Albert Breer of SI, has a focus on, it's from yesterday, on Julio Jones, specifically how Atlanta has been dealing with nagging foot and knee injuries for him for years, how they've like tailored their offense around that to make it easier for him. And there's a fascinating question there about how that's going to work in another offense and whether Julio can be effective there. So great stuff from him, and we're going to be able to get Breer on later this week. Can't wait to ask him about it. Kenny Mayne ends his final SportsCenter interview with Aaron Rodgers in the best way possible. Do not go anywhere. You want to hear this sound. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. A couple awesome stories here for you guys, because it's The Timeline. Reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. Let's start with this one. Kenny Mayne, can I say friend of the show? I'm going to say friend of the show. I'll speak for him.
He came on our show, Stacey.
He was on the show, and
on the
he's
most,
friendly.
Most so. Monumental moment, right? The most monumental moment of his career was his last day. And guess what? He decided to spend it with us, Stacey. So absolutely,
right.
He's a friend of the show.
Did he forget? Yeah. That doesn't matter. I forget lots of stuff all the time. So what? That doesn't mean anything. But anyways, Kenny Mayne ended his final SportsCenter interview with Aaron Rodgers in the best way possible. Take a listen.
Hey, just last thing. Last time we did the interview together, you told me to go heavy in the cryptocurrency game. I did. We're down 40%. Then I lost my job. Gretchen just wants a new comforter. F*** you, Aaron Rodgers.
Literally no one else could end that interview that way. There is one person on planet Earth who could have an interview that way on SportsCenter with Aaron Rodgers, and his name is Kenny Mayne.
Oh, my gosh. That is absolutely incredible. It is. You're right. He is the only person that could get away with that. My favorite part about it, though, is that Kenny Mayne walks away, and then it's Aaron Rodgers with, like, a very awkward, lingering, like, 5 seconds of air where he's like, okay, am I on air? Am I off air? Do I continue to laugh? Like, what's going on? Just leaving Aaron Rodgers in this really uncomfortable spot. But, man, Kenny Mayne just so unbelievably funny.
It's painful. Painful. Brooks Koepka has high school level pettiness when Bryson DeChambeau walks in his general direction. Take a listen.
Brooks, what were you able to do well and put up that nice number?
Just ball struck my way around this place. Didn't putt well, but I don't think many guys are going to putt well with this wind. It's very tough. I don't know what other guys have said, or I just felt it difficult to read. You know, sometimes. I lost my train of thought. Yeah, hearing that.
What happened? Like, what happened here? I know that we had Mike Salk on with us earlier, who was trying to explain this feud. It's the first time I'd heard about it. I don't keep the closest eye on golf. I just kind of hear the biggest stories from it. Obviously, this being one of them, and I don't get it. What happened between these two?
Well, the thing is that it first started with Brooks Koepka taking a shot at Bryson DeChambeau. You know, if you remember when DeChambeau first came onto the scene, he was notorious for taking forever in between each shot. Every shot, it took forever. And Brooks Koepka just said the quiet part out loud in terms of what everybody else was thinking. Like, dude, hit the ball. You're taking forever. And eventually golf changed their rules to how long, basically like a shot clock. Like, you've got to hit the ball, strike the ball in a certain amount of time. And ever since then, there have been little things along the way that they have just kind of gone back and forth at each other for. And you knew that they were feuding, but you didn't know how deep it went until you saw this interview, this mess up by Brooks Koepka, this interaction. And I mean, Koepka, like, keep it together, man. Like, are you kidding me? Like, the eye roll, the reaction, just so unbelievably petty, and it just brought me back. It brought me back to shivers, because it reminded me of middle school and high school teen drama.
All right, the Seahawks have a new tight end. Now, I am hoping this is the correct player. Cam Sutton? Cameron Sutton, is he of Fresno State? All right, 6'6", 226. I mean, again, just adding depth here heading into the offseason. But Seahawks now with six tight ends on the roster. obviously, these are not all going to remain on the roster. I'm assuming they run with three tight ends. You can lock in Gerald Everett there, presumably. And then you've got Colby Parkinson, a draft pick from last year, who you're looking at. So really, you're kind of fighting for that last spot there. Is it going to be Will Disley remaining? I would assume so. But you've still got some guys that can fight for spots, certainly can fight for a spot on the practice squad. But if you want a guy for sure guaranteed to be on your roster, it's going to be a tough, tough, tough battle because those guys moved to the practice squad have to be released first and can always be claimed by other teams. So let's talk about who can't slip, Jake, when you look at this tight end group. Right now, if you have to guess, who are your front runners?
The front runners, I think this is a three-man race, and I don't think it's really anywhere close. It is Will Disley, it's Colby Parkinson, and it's Gerald Everett. To me, those are the three guys that, without a doubt, are a lock for the roster. Now, after that, it becomes really intriguing because you don't know where that extra roster spot is going to come from. Are they going to carry four tight ends? Is there a tight end on here on this roster that can be versatile, that can be a flex tight end, that can participate in special teams after that point remains to be seen. In the past, they have been able to keep four tight ends. Last year, they kept Luke Wilson around as that fourth tight end. I don't think that we'll see Luke in a Seahawks uniform again. Never say never, I guess. But I would be very intrigued by their decision on what they want to do with those numbers, because also remember, you have the legendary Nick Ballore at fullback. Never really plays fullback for you.
Don't disrespect Nick Ballore or his mustache.
Don't do that. But he never really plays fullback. But I would say that he's also kind of that extra guy on your offensive roster that you carry around because he is such an excellent special teams player.
Luke Wilson is going to be one of those guys that, like, the year is 2035 and the Seahawks have signed a tight end in like June. And you look at it and it's like, oh, Luke Wilson. Wow, they signed Luke Wilson again. That's pretty cool. What a nice guy. Let's get him on for an interview. It's just going to be forever. It's going to be a forever relationship. All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by the Pro Club. We're going to have Scott Service and Shannon Dreyer joining us for the Scott Service Show coming up at 1. Before we get to that, though, let's reflect on what we learned from the Mariners game last night. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
The skipper, Scott Service, joining us for the Scott Service Show at the top of the hour, so very little time. Don't go anywhere. Stay glued where you are right now. Before we get to that, Jake and I are going to recap, just reflect on, I guess, not so much what we learned about the Mariners from last night, because I don't know what one night tells you, especially when it's snapping a six-game losing streak. And, oh, by the way, you had six losses before that to reflect on. But rather, whether it's recalibrated the way we're watching this season, right? Because two of the biggest players, the biggest moments from last night happened with Jared Kelenic and Kyle Lewis. Two massive, massive home runs for those guys and two big reasons for fans to get excited, Jake.
It is two big reasons, and the reason why is because you got Kyle Lewis, who has kind of been struggling in terms of his return back from injury to start the season, and you haven't seen him really hit his stride or hit with power in the way that we saw Kyle Lewis hit last year when he won the AL Rookie of the Year, right? And that was something that I kept thinking about during the game, Stacey, when it kept happening. I saw his numbers and three home runs, and I'm going, man, are we going to see Kyle Lewis hit for power again? And, man, did he absolutely crush a ball here. DJ, play that cut.
The 1-2 pitch from Montas. Here it comes to Lewis. Fastball swung on, driven deep to left. And just taking a look is Mark Cannon. That baby's gone. Two-run homer for Kyle Lewis, and the Mariners have a 3-0 lead here in the third.
Absolutely no doubt about that one, Stacey. And when you talk about the development of this team, Kyle Lewis is a big piece of that because, as you mentioned earlier in three questions, he's already farther along in this process than someone like Jared Kelenic. You need to see Kyle Lewis. He hasn't played a full 162-game season yet as a pro, but he's farther along down the line, and he should not have the same level of struggles that any of these other guys do coming out of the blocks. And so I really, really hope that we see Kyle Lewis really take the next step as he goes along in his process. But I have to say, anytime Jared Kelenic hits the ball or gets on base, it's a beautiful thing. It's an absolute beautiful thing.
Well, and I liked you pointing to Jared Kelenic talking about, you know, it was frustrating struggling that much because he wanted to help the team. In fact, let's take a listen to that really quickly.
It's extremely frustrating. You know, I want to come in and help the team win, and it's hard to do that when you hit a ground ball right at somebody every time. But like, it's baseball, and the older I get, and the more that I am around older guys, the more you start to realize that it comes in waves. So you can't get too down on yourself, and you just got to stick to what got you here.
Now, I've been wondering how Jared Kelnick is going to deal with that success coming in waves, because the conversation we were having with, everyone, Jonathan Mayo, who else did we have on talking about that?
Jim Callis
was, this is a guy who's been so great that he's almost never struggled. Like, he's had moments, he's dealt with injuries, yeah, but he's never really struggled. He's always been great. How is he going to deal with going to the big leagues and finally realizing, like, man, I can't get anything off of this pitcher? Like, he is giving me nothing right now, and I'm in a slump. How's he going to deal with that? I think that was encouraging for fans to hear.
No, it is encouraging for fans to hear. And the other part that I love about Jared Kelnick in that interview was not only having the perspective that I think is very monumental for young players and the mental approach, but also the candor of saying, look, I want to help this team win. I'm frustrated because I want to contribute, and I expect more not only out of myself, but for my team, right? I love that mentality. I love that mindset, and that's some of the things that I wish we could hear more from, you know, Scott Service or, you know, other players in general. I think that when you have somebody like Kelnick who can be a fire starter, I love hearing his personality and seeing after a day off him being able to take that breather and him being able to translate it with a very nice game for himself. And Stacey, look, Kelnick, all he's got to do is get on base. Like, it's great to watch him crush the home runs and hit with power and all that, but you watch the very first inning, his first at bat, he takes a walk, he is able to get to second on a pass ball, and then you see Mitch Haniger hit him in with an RBI on the very next at bat. I mean, those are the types of things that Jared Kelnick, he can find a way to impact the game if he can get himself on base.
Exactly. And let's talk, too, about Ty France being back in that lineup, how much that helped. I think that, you've been waiting for Jake Sky Ty to be a topic of conversation here. Well, here we go, Jake. Setting you up with this one.
You kind of cut out there, Stacey. Oh. What did you ask?
With Ty France, I'm hoping that when he's back in this, now that he's back in this lineup, that any lingering issues he was also having a bit of a slump, were more tied to that wrist injury that presumably now he's bounced back from. And It was noticeably different. I know Curtis texted us about this. Noticeably different in this lineup, seeing someone that looks like they belong at the head of a major league roster.
Absolutely. And that was one of the big concerns, is that, we were noticing the injury, right? The wrist injury, Stacey, but and the timing of when he was taking his slump. But you're also going, is that really the reason? And I hope that we're able to witness Ty France come back healthy and really hit like he was at the beginning of the year, because that was one of the things in this process, in the rebuild, that I felt like and feel like today that I can pin my hat on, that you know Ty France can really hit, right? That's what everybody is, you know, having his nickname as. And that was the one thing that I think we were all hoping and basing a lot of decisions on. Okay, Ty France, where does he fit in the future? Is he a DH? Is he a third baseman that you're willing to maybe take one of the better defensive third basemen in baseball in Kyle Seager and potentially part ways with him in the future, because you're willing to sacrifice some defense for the incredible bat that Ty France has and that he can bring to the table? If you don't have that, that's a scary proposition. So it was really, really good to see Ty France come back, be healthy, and get a nice double yesterday.
Once again, brings us back to conversations we were having about the future, right? It's great to see guys like Lewis and France and Kelnick do well in a game. I would rather see them do well than see, like, Nottingham have, I don't know, four hits. That would be a cool game, a cool story. It's wonderful, right? You'd be like, good for that guy. But right. What I want to see and what fans want to see is those guys that are going to be cornerstones of your team doing well. It's why it's so important, hopefully, that Gilbert improve tonight, right? It's why it's important that you see guys take those steps forward. Is it an awesome story when a random dude has a great night? Absolutely. You love that for him. And it's fun to watch as a Mariners fan when there's a great game on that night. But What you really want to see is Kyle Lewis have a great game. What you really want to see is Jared Kelnick get that home run, you know, kind of like shake off some of the cobwebs he was having for a little bit and kind of the little baby slump he was in. Like, what you want to see is those pieces you want for your future do well. It's exactly what I hope happens with Evan White when he gets back. It's the same conversation we were having earlier, Jake, when it was, you know what? The reason Evan White is concerning isn't just because, oh, his bat's cooling off. It's because he's a guy you've committed to for the future, and he's supposed to be your first baseman of the future. And you need to be better than just a Gold Glove, you know, defender. Like, you need to be better than that.
Yeah, you do. And I think you hit it perfectly. But when you talk about as well, when you look at why it's important for the building blocks to have those moments and not just the random one-offs from a guy like Sam Haggerty, Donovan Walton, you know, those types of guys, is because you know that, no offense to Sam Haggerty and Donovan Walton and Jose Godoy, those guys that are in the lineup right now, Jacob Nottingham, as you pointed out, those guys are not going to be consistent everyday ball players, right? Those guys, those performances are supposed to be one-offs that you hope happen, that one of those types of players has that type of game and they rotate through the season, that they're not going to consistently do that. You're looking at Kelnick, Kyle Lewis, Evan White, Ty France, Mitch Haniger. You're looking at those guys to be those types of players for you on a consistent basis. And that's why it's so important to see them have those moments and to see them hopefully develop some consistency as they continue to develop throughout the season. I still think it's going to be an up and down bumpy ride for a guy like Jared Kelnick, but what I love is his perspective. I love his mindset, and we were all concerned about how he's going to handle adversity and failure, and I think that he got frustrated at different points. That's why Scott Servais sat him out, you know, a couple days ago, but it's the mindset and the mature approach that I think he has that will pay off down the road.
All right. I see Shannon Dreher back there. Hey, Shannon, Mariners insider for 710 ESPN Seattle. And that means the Scott Servais Show is right around the corner. So you don't want to go anywhere. Hear from the skipper next.